hoping that you understand. You ain't the man to tell you in demand. Just pray to God we keep you in the plan. You ain't the man to tell you in it.
Hey there, welcome to Time Out with Ty. After doing a lot of general NBA podcasts, a rap podcast with Joey Burbs, just all sorts of stuff going all over, I wanted to head back home to Milwaukee. I mean, I've been here the whole time. Like, my podcast isn't on the level where, like, I get to fly around and record. That'd be dope. But it's not there yet. But we're taking the content back to Milwaukee. We're doing a Bucks issue of Time Out with Ty, which hasn't happened in a little while. And to talk Bucks with me and rock with me for a while, I've got my man, staff writer at Behind the Buck Pass, staff writer at HoopsHabit.com, Jordan Tresky. How's it going, Jordan?
Good. How about yourself?
Oh, it's going pretty well. I'm recording two podcasts in one day, and I really like doing podcasts. It sounds like my voice doesn't like it as much as I do, but I'm going to power through. So you watch Summer League, right?
Yes.
Yes. Did you skim Summer League? I skim Summer League. There's no shame in skimming Summer League.
Some of the games I did not watch live, and I watched back and regretted it as I was watching it. But that's usually the case with Summer League.
Well, it didn't help that the big three, the little big three, I guess you could say, for the Bucks, the three guys on the actual roster were Rashad Vaughn, Thon Maker, and Malcolm Brogdon. It didn't help that all of them turned in just shitty Summer League performances in general.
Yeah, it was, from that standpoint, it was not entertaining. And then I was tweeting from the Behind the Bucks accounts for the Mavericks game, which was the worst out of all of them, surprisingly. I wrote it, as the game was going on, I was like, it was basically like a sliding scale. Like, the first game was like, oh, this is actually entertaining. Like, we forgot about Summer League. It's new and everything. And then it just, like, game after game, it got worse and worse. And then just, we lost the title, which I was looking forward to. I mean, come on. I won that title.
Yeah, I mean, I think it really hurt that we lost Ronald Roberts Jr. before anything even started.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's actually a very good big man. Him and Thon together, I think, would have been a really good front court. But he went to go play in Turkey, I want to say.
Yeah, I can't remember the name, but it's definitely Turkey.
Yeah, it's in Europe for sure. I'm pretty sure in Turkey, yeah. So the Bucks lost him. That was like, I remember we were all happy about that when it happened. Like, oh, they're looking for diamonds in the rough. They're going to bolster the Summer League team. And then he left and just turned into Thon doing fun stuff. Malcolm Brogdon still not knowing the NBA three-point line is longer, and Rashad Vaughn just being Rashad Vaughn. Who were you most? I don't want to say. Maybe impressed is too strong of a word. Who were you most not displeased to watch on the Bucks in Summer League?
Well, I think you'd have to go with Thon first, just because of. No one really knew or even saw him play. I mean, obviously, he's coming from high school. He's coming from a very, very unconventional road or path. So there was – the intrigue was already there, and for the most part, I was impressed with him. Obviously, we could talk about his flaws, his weaknesses, and what really stood out from a negative aspect. But I don't know. I was still – kind of taken away, and maybe it was my expectations or something like that, but I saw a guy that could contribute right away, maybe not, definitely not in a, you know, maybe a positive impact, but just a guy, maybe small types of minutes or, you know, 15 minutes here or there, energy type guy. That's what I saw from him, and that was very positive takeaway, I thought, for him specifically.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the biggest thing with Thon was it looked like he fit in, which was, like you said, like, we had never seen him play against real competition outside of, like, getting worked by Sky LeBissiere in like a warm up or a I don't even know what the word is right now, a workout or whatever it was. Yeah. So you're sort of wondering, like, is he really going to be ready for this? And it turned out, I mean, it's summer league again. It's not the NBA. I'm not saying he's, you know, an NBA ready player right now, but he was ready for summer league, more ready than a lot of guys in this draft class. I just have Synergy Sports Tech tweeted out like all the first round picks, their offensive efficiency leaderboards, their points per possession. And Thon comes in right around the middle of the pack. Actually, I'd probably say in the top third from what it looks like here in points per possession. He had 0.88 points per possession, which is not great. You'd like to see one, but only four guys hit 1 point per possession out of rookies. Chris Dunn, Jakub Poeltl, Juan Hernan Gomez, and Pascal Siakam, your guy over with the Raptors, were the only ones to actually hit that mark. So Thon is in the top, looks like, five or six guys across the NBA. So that's not bad. I mean, you look at guys like Denzel Valentine was 0.71, Henry Ellenson 0.78, Wade Baldwin 0.7.
Papi Giannis, sorry to cut in, but Papi Giannis is like
the worst. Yeah,
0.46, 0.5.
Like they have him as 0.5 here, the worst among all rookies who participated. Second worst, Dragan Bender at 0.58. That's not good. And although he had some great passes, Ben Simmons came in pretty low at 0.64 as well. Not a good summer league for Papi Giannis. I'm glad we had just have regular Giannis. But just to see Thon, to get back to the point, I kind of meandered off it. Just to see Thon stand up and play and do things and not just sort of get lost in the fervor of probably playing against the most talented group he's ever played again in an actual game, I would assume. I mean, unless like those 5-on-5s, you could probably say, but I think Summer League probably edges them by a little bit. There's some second-year NBA guys that'll show up, and I think he held his own well enough. I mean, he had a 17-and-17 game. Clearly, he did something right.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think there's a lot, I mean, a lot of pieces about Thon, you know, with Summer League and everybody, you know, congregating. It's becoming such a big event now for basketball writers and just executives, all that stuff. There's been a lot of good pieces about Thon, and I thought Jonathan Turks of The Ringer kind of put it best, where when he stays in his lane, there is a productive player right away. It's just the other things, like, you know, bring up the ball at the court, which he is fine with, but it's just more of like trying to score and, you know, doing these spin moves. And I mean, he had a fadeaway three, which is like crazy in that Dallas game. But when he stays in his lane, there's a productive player there. It's just the other stuff that I think you want the sky is the limit for him, but you also kind of want him just to be focused on one thing and try to grow from there, kind of from that aspect.
Yeah, Thon played Summer League like I play NBA 2K. Like, I'll have like a my player power forward and I'll just get the rebound, take it up, and shoot a three right away. Like, that's pretty much how he approached Summer League. And if he does that in the NBA, he'll play for about 4 seconds per game before he gets pulled. But it's Summer League, so you don't really mind all that much. Like, I get that you want him to build good habits and all that, but he'll have a lot of time to do those things with real players. Like, I don't want to see Thon give up shots. So, you know, and Teron Pettaway had a good Summer League with the Bucks, but I don't want to see Teron Pettaway get shots instead of Thon Maker. I don't even want to see Malcolm Brogdon and Rashad Vaughn getting too many of his shots, because it's like, you took the guy at 10 overall for a reason. Like, he's meant to be good, hopefully very good. And I think he hasn't ruled out the possibility that he could be very good. Like, I don't think anyone watched him for the entirety of his Summer League duration and said, this guy's going to be a star. But I don't think he showed decisively either way, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, I mean, you just want to see, you want to kind of put him in different situations. Obviously, they just Thon was the only one that they did that with, but you want to see what is he good at, what is he not good at. I mean, obviously, it's some of it's room for experimentation, especially if you're not winning games. But I think that's what you just want to see. You want to see what he can show right away and what he can't show right away. But from his perspective, obviously, like, I don't know. I keep going back to that thing which Charks wrote and even said, I think, on a podcast where when he stood in his lane and, you know, even going against guys that are way bigger than him, obviously he had a tough time. I want to say, like, the D-League Select game and the Grizzlies game. But he still found ways to just, you know, bring the right type of energy, something that the Bucks really struggled with last season, as we all know, watching them. I think that right away, like, you can't quantify that into stats, but knowing that this high motor that everybody has talked about leading up to the draft, and you see it, it's like, oh, you kind of feel relieved. Like, seeing or reading it is one thing and seeing it is a different thing. And I felt relieved seeing that from him over the course of Summer League.
Yeah, that's something I know Adam McGee wrote about really well. I want to say yesterday. Well, this pod will go up on Monday. He wrote about it over the weekend sometime in his five takeaways piece, is that the thing you got from him is his passion and drive, most of all. Like, some of his block shots, like, he'll fly over on help defense and block a shot. I remember he blocked a three in the first game. I was really excited about some of his dunks. Like, when he goes to the rim with his quickness, he's a dangerous weapon. I mean,
yeah.
Imagining him and Giannis running on breaks together is, like, clearly we haven't seen that yet because, of course, Giannis isn't anywhere close to a summer league game anymore. But, I mean, just imagine when they do get some NBA minutes together, those two guys running fast breaks, how do you guard that? Because they're faster than any center. Like, there's a handful of players quick enough to keep up with them at their size. Like, and I'm not comparing talents here, just body types. But your Paul Georges and Kevin Durant's, like, there aren't too many of those guys. The Bucks might have two of them. So that's puts them in pretty, I want to say, unique territory. You don't see teams, and Thon's not really a wing player like Giannis. He's certainly more of a big man, but he's very quick. It's rare to have two teams with guys who are around 7 foot. Thon's 7'1". Giannis is approaching 7 feet tall, who are that fast. I mean, just, like, even though it's going to take time for Thon to work out a lot of kinks, just throwing him on the floor with Giannis is just going to have some really, really fun, lengthy, quick lineups.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So that'll be something to look forward to for sure in the regular season. I think, like, this is something, and I'm so bad with names, Charks? Charts?
I thought it was Charks, but
I think it's Charts. I think that's how, like, I listen to that Ringer podcast, too. I think it's Charts. That's something that, like you pointed out, Charts has said before, is he's going to get NBA minutes, I feel like. Like, we're going to see him, not a ton, but I think we're going to see him in that sort of not quite first backup at any position, but, like, second backup at a couple different positions, maybe. Maybe not center to start, maybe just for small doses, but, like, Teletovic will be the first four off the bench. And you probably Plumlee will be the first five if Monroe is gone. If Monroe is there, Henson will be. But you'll just see, I think we'll just see Thon sort of sneak in between them at times. I think we're going to see him, though. Like, he showed that he's quick enough to stay in the game, which is important because some rookies just did not look ready for this. Bender, I think, might have been the most blatant example. Poppy Giannis, too. Thon was, and like I said earlier, that doesn't translate directly to the NBA. Summer League is completely subpar comparatively. But I think we'll see him on the floor, and he's going to make a lot of dumb mistakes, but he's going to have some highlights too.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, not to make this comparison because I've seen it a lot already, but I will make the comparison. I got to own it. I think it's going to be similar to year one of Giannis, where it's a different situation, obviously, and different quality and, you know, all that stuff. But I think I could see a very similar role with Thon, where I don't think he's going to be really involved with the offense besides, like, energy plays or maybe passing out to the corner three or something like that, because he does have a workable shot. I mean, I want to say he was 31% from three against very small sample size, but there is a shot there that is very promising for, especially for a Bucks team that, as we talked about for a long time, they struggle shooting. So I could see that kind of role for him. Again, but just in at most 20 minutes a game and all that stuff. I think they're definitely going to keep him in a very just under kid's wing or Hammond's wing, or whatever you want to call it, and just guide him along slowly and kind of keep it to his liking. Because we have to remember too, and we saw it, and someone like, for sure, playing from a high school season or even just going, you know, the AAU circuit and all that stuff, that's so much different than an NBA season. I mean, you saw him struggling in like back-to-back games where I can't remember what game it was, but he definitely looked like just his energy was off, and even just like jumping for loose – going for loose balls, jumping for dunks or something like that.
Was that right after the D-League Select game? Was that the Dallas game where he got 10 fouls? Are you talking about a different one?
That might have been – who were they playing? It definitely was a Dallas game. I can't remember what game that was. Was it the Grizzlies?
Oh, maybe I'm thinking – yeah, maybe that was the Grizzlies game.
Yeah, they
played the Grizzlies first, yeah.
Yeah, that one, you could just tell, I think, just going adjusting to the NBA schedule, that's going to be in itself kind of fascinating to watch how they kind of juggle Thon's minutes or distribute his minutes in that sense, because he has to get just used to, definitely a rigorous schedule from that, like a conditioning aspect.
Yeah, I think you're going to see almost more like how baseball teams do it, in that they're probably try to stagger off days. Like, mm-hmm. I'm sure you'll see if Mirza and a center or two, a backup center or two, are both healthy, and Jabari, of course, and Henson, you'll probably see Thon just catch some DMP CDs on those games just mm-hmm. to save his legs, especially back-to-backs. And then, you know, maybe he'll see a few more minutes if Mirza's sitting out a game or two, or if somebody else is, you know, you'll see him sort of slide in those minutes. And then I wouldn't be surprised at all to see him get the next game, especially if it's a back-to-back off. Like, I think if we see Thon for 20 minutes one night, we probably don't see him very much the next night. Just because, like you said, college players have a hard time adjusting to the NBA schedule. And that's a much higher level of competition and a much longer season than the high school one. So you're talking about a massive, massive jump for Thon to make. That's a good point. I haven't really heard that brought up very much, but even more so than college players or like guys that go overseas are even more ready for it. Probably, who was it? Moutier, what played in China for the year, but he was hurt for some of it, but still he was probably more used to the rigors of a pro schedule. A guy like Thon coming out of high school, not at all used to it. So that's going to be something to watch, is his DMP CDs and just low minutes sometimes in his first season, just getting him used to it. The one thing you hope from him is that he can stay healthy through it, largely. I mean, if he misses a game or two here, you know, he's going to sit out some games. But just to be able to be involved the whole way through, I mean, by game 82, he'll probably get a start just because it's the last game, unless it's a playoff seeding thing. Who knows? Hopefully there's playoff seedings at stake. Well, here's a fun question. I want to get back to the other two Summer League guys, but just because I brought it up, do you think the Bucks are a playoff team this year?
Oh, man. I don't know. I really don't know. I've actually really thought about that a lot lately. And I think, I mean, we could throw out teams like, for sure, like locks, like the Cavs, Celtics.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can rule out a top four seed, because I feel like in some order, it's going to be Cavs, Celtics, Raptors, Pacers, personally.
Ooh, Pacers.
I really like the Pacers offseason. Like, I really – they don't need to play Paul George at the four anymore. He likes the wing better. Thad's going to help him spread the floor a lot. Big Al off the bench, and he's fine with it, too. Right away, he's fine with it. Oh, I love their moves. If they got rid of Monta, and I really love giving them Teague, I think they're going to be fantastic. I love their offseason. The Raptors stood pat, which is enough considering how good they are. The Celtics are going to be phenomenal.
Yeah.
I have the Celtics as number two. Like, people have no idea how good Al Horford is.
Oh, yeah.
Like, their weakest position was center, and they now have the best center in the East? No, maybe Drummond's the best. One of the best centers in the East. Up there.
Probably the most versatile.
The most versatile, and you have him with the NBA, and you got him with Brad Stevens, who, like, they're going to draw up some shit. Like, they're going to be great. And then you look at teams fighting for the next four spots. The aforementioned Andre Drummond's Pistons, I think, will be up there in contention. The Hawks, who lost Al Horford but got Dwight Howard, which is not a bad replacement. I'm just trying to think of who else. The people think the Bulls and the Knicks. I'm not sold on either of them. There's certainly talent. I don't know if they can hold it together. Maybe, probably one of them. I don't think the Bulls. I think the Bulls are going to be awful, to be honest. They're going to be terrible. The Knicks could be fun, though. The Knicks will probably push for a spot. I see the Bucks sliding in around there, personally. Six or seven.
I mean, I would have liked that a lot.
I just think, like, you look at how good Giannis was at the end of the year. Now you get him with a point guard perfectly accustomed to play with him, which, if you look back last season, the best point guard he played with was Jared Bayless, who had his best career year, but still kind of a ball hog, takes a lot of shots, not as good on defense.
What, like 25 games or so?
Yeah, missed a lot of games. Michael Carter-Williams at times looked like he could shoot, but not really. And then you're talking about other guys. Ennis, who we both like, but is not a reliable floor spacer. Yeah. O.J. Mayo and Grievous Vasquez, who were both atrocious. Dellavedova is going to be like – Giannis is going to love playing with Dellavedova. Like, he's going to make it so easy for him to run the floor. Middleton was at an all-star-esque level. So just those two guys alone, I mean, especially if they move Craig Monroe and they play with Henson and Plumlee all year, I just think that the two – and really Jabari too, I think he's going to come on a bit. But the big two right now for me, and like not future but just this season, is Giannis and Chris. And I think they're both set up to be very, very good – to have very, very good seasons this year.
I do agree. I think obviously there's three – well, at most three. We don't know about Plumlee. I mean – who knows about Greg Monroe? That's just a whole other ball.
Were you the one who put in the video? Yeah, you were. In your piece, were you put in the video of when MCW got asked about Greg Monroe?
Oh, yeah. Just super awkward.
I love that video.
Awkward.
Oh, I don't know, man.
Yeah. And laughing like nervously and just throwing it off.
Like, I could not think of another situation where the guy doesn't just say something like, well, I hope so, but that's not my decision. Like, that's always the canned line. Is this guy going to get traded? I don't know. It's not my decision, but I love that guy. I hope they bring him back. Like, everyone always says that. He goes, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, and it is somewhat ironic that they ask – I mean, Mike Carter-Williams, his place on the team past this year, we don't even know. Yeah. But just to ask him, of all people, like, how's Greg Monroe doing? He's just like, yeah. He's a member of our team. He literally is a member, which – I mean, that doesn't sound anything like that.
Well, the nail in the coffin for me was the lack of an exit interview for Monroe.
Yeah, that was strange.
Like, that's super weird. Like, I wasn't sold on JOB and Inglis not coming back just because they're role players. But, like, with how much they pumped up Monroe, like, after the signing, like, and even during the season, even though there were rumors that they were shopping him, they still acted like they weren't. But when they didn't bring him in for one of those, or he didn't go, or whichever, it just seemed like, This is over, and it still isn't.
Yeah. And even, I mean, think about MCW. He was out for the last, what, month and a half, and he still had an exit interview? Like, they had a game the night before, and he just wasn't there. I don't know. It just, for some reason, it felt weird right away.
Yeah. You were saying, I cut you off. You were saying about... It might be too late to go back. Something about they have two centers, three if there's Monroe, but who knows what they're going to do with him.
Oh, thank you. Just remember, roster spots. I think what they do with their remaining roster spots, it's not going to move the needle by themselves, but I still would like them to kind of address possible depth issues. Because, I mean, we talk about this a lot on Winning Six and just writing about it and all this stuff. Their bench just from the get-go, just it was a total – I mean, it failed them from the beginning of the season.
It was Bayless and nothing. Like,
yeah,
really.
Basically.
That was – I mean, you look at the last year, the year before, you had Bayless, Jared Dudley, and Zaza were really the key bench guys. And you take away two of them and don't really replace them with anyone that good. Grievous Vasquez, who had a terrible season, probably hurt when they traded for him, was like the main bring in. I mean, Chris Copeland, you can't really expect him to contribute anything. It's no surprise, but yeah, it was a dumpster fire.
I was high on that bench for some odd reason.
Do you know who I wrote about adding to the bench today?
Was it Martin?
I did a piece with five guys. Martin was in there just because I feel like he's like an obvious fit. Yeah. I want Lance. Lance Stevenson.
He was good
in Memphis.
He was, but that was also a product of the situation, though.
It was. But I think like he's a really good man defender, a wing defender, which is something they could use off the bench. They don't really have that right now. Malcolm Brogdon, maybe, but that's asking a lot from a rookie. Otherwise, you're looking at probably Steve Novak will be brought back. Not a guy you can count on. Rashad Vaughn, not a very good defender. Lance, very good wing defender. Streaky, but at times reliable three-point shooter. His experience, he's been to an Eastern Conference Finals. He guarded LeBron James.
And he blew in his ear.
He did blow in his ear. He does what it takes to win. He's like playful Deli. Like Deli is more real dirty. Lance is more playful dirty. They could like tag team guys.
I don't know. I remember it was the summer where he eventually went to the Hornets, and I just remember seeing – this is early in my Bucks Twitter fandom or being a part of it. And I just remember seeing a lot of people clamoring for Lance. And even some of my friends that are Bucks fans, and I was just like – I don't know. Like I've seen a lot of crazy cancer situations, but adding Lance Stevenson, I don't. Oh my god.
I don't think he's a bad locker room guy.
No. Yeah, that's true. I think that was a lot of it was exacerbated by Evan Turner when he came to Indiana, which apparently there's like weird stories about that. But
yeah, I've heard some of these, like this boat trip and everything,
and. I believe there was a choking, someone strangled or something during
practice. I think I heard rumors about someone's like mother being involved or wife. I don't know what it was. I don't want to know, really. Look, yeah. Here's the thing. You got to hope they can keep him in line. But like I'm trying to remember who said this. Somebody smart, some smart NBA person. Like I want to say it's Bill Simmons, but it might have been someone he was talking to. There's like there's a one knucklehead rule. You can have one. Like one is fine. Like it adds a little bit of flavor, but one, like the rest of the team can keep them in line. If you have more than one, it's too many. I don't know if Rashad Vaughn counts as one. Like you don't want to go to 1.5 either. So I don't know if they could pull it off.
Like a fork ball. That's a baseball joke.
We got a one splitter rule.
Yeah, one splitter rule.
I'd like for him to be their knucklehead, though. I'd be down for that. Do you think they're going to do anything fun with the roster spot? Is Steve Novak for sure going to be a Buck? Did you read – this is like rapid-fire questions. Did you read Charles Gardner's piece about Steve Novak?
I did.
Was that not the saddest article you've ever read? Oh, my God. I felt so bad for Steve Novak. He sounds like a guy just head over heels for a girl. Who like just likes him for his car, like in the way that piece was written, it was like I'm sure they're gonna call. Vespa.
It's not Vespa. A car. It's like a Vespa, like something more like obscure.
It was so like I felt like he's so real and I respect him, but I felt so bad for him. He's like, I'm just waiting for the call. I know they have a lot of other business they got to take care of. I know I'll be the 15th guy, and I was reading it like, oh man, nah, you're a strong, independent free agent, Steve Novak. You don't need no team.
There was also a quote. I'm probably going to be butchering this. But it's something like, I haven't looked anywhere else because I want to be with the Bucks or something like that.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Come on, man. It's the summer of getting paid.
True. But I think I think it's just inevitable when they sign him. They're going to wait how they juggle the salary and all that stuff and putting signings ahead. I just think he's going to be the 15th guy. It just makes sense to me, especially because he's been so public throughout, like, he's had more minutes doing, like, community events than actually on the court for the Bucks. That it just makes – it would look so bad for them not to, like, bring him back or wait till he's actually healthy or something like that and then bring him in or something. I don't know. I just – it's a very weird situation.
Are you ready for conspiracy theorist Ty?
I am ready.
I think that there is another fairly big move happening for a couple of reasons. Miles Plumlee has not been re-signed, and as far as I've read, has yet to meet with any teams. Here's why I think this is true, and I don't have any sources on this. This is just pure conjecture. I think the Bucks have talked to Miles Plumlee and said, look, Miles Plumlee, we're going to re-sign you. But we're not going to come to a verbal agreement yet because first we have to do this Greg Monroe situation. We're going to get rid of this Greg Monroe guy, and then we're going to have cap space. But we're not going to use that cap space on you. We're going to see about using it on someone else maybe first because we can go over the cap to re-sign you without having to pay the luxury tax. So they could go get – and, you know, there's not a ton of great guys left. J.R. Smith, Monty Unis is still there. Please God, no, but Deion Waiters is still there. Mo Harkless is one guy who's also still there, who's a much better option.
Solid restricted free agents still available.
Yeah, more than you'd think. Like, I think Mo Harkless would be one of the good examples for this. But, like, let's say they trade Monroe to somebody, and they could do a thing with Portland if Portland wanted him. But, like, let's say they dump him off to New Orleans and pick up who knows what. Like, it's hard to formulate the whole thing. Like, I didn't write this down beforehand, so I don't have a more detailed plan. But you dump him and don't take much salary back. You have room to sign Mo Harkless, and then you can go over the cap, like, $4 or $5 million to keep Plumlee. You're not yet in luxury tax, the luxury bracket, so it doesn't cost the Bucks a lot extra. It just costs them $4 million extra. And all of a sudden, you're looking at having a good core of guys locked up. I don't know if they want to do that with the Giannis extension coming up.
Yeah.
Maybe not, but that could be a thing where they're saying, look, let us use our cap after we dump Monroe, and then we'll come get you. I feel like the fact that Plumlee hasn't met with any other teams yet means he's likely to be a Buck.
Yeah, I mean, there was something about him, like,
maybe there was the one tweet about him, and I don't think it was
David Aldridge.
I think it was Aldridge who said teams were looking to clear cap to try to offer him deals. Mm-hmm. But that still hasn't happened as far as we all know, as far as I know, at least. So either no one's found a way to make the room, or there was more smoke than fire there.
Yeah. And it's not just Miles Plumlee. We're seeing this with Monroe itself, and just the lack there is – he's available, but there's no, like, deals at all being, you know, even thrown out there.
I can't believe they couldn't. Like, I really think it's that they want something, because there's no way the Mavericks are saying no for, like, a random role player. Like, there's no way the Mavericks aren't just eating that contract, because, like, who else are they going to start? I forgot who they just picked up, a center.
Well, they got Bogut.
No. They got Bogut, yeah. But, like, you got to think they, like, before the whole KD thing even happened, the Bucks could have been like, hey, Dallas, your roster is bare. Put this dude next to Dirk. Let him eat up some space for Dirk. Now they're probably out of play. But, like, I think they could have dumped him. I think they want to return.
Mm-hmm. And even, like, teams like Charlotte, like, there is still, like, a starting – like, I like actually Cody Zeller, but you could make a case for why they wouldn't be sold on him as a starting big man and make that as a Monroe option. But they also brought in Roy Hibbert. So even, like, their backup options, these teams have already – I mean, they've gotten – addressed these issues, whether they work out or not, we'll see. But from a depth chart perspective, they've worked on that as well, or, you know, brought in guys as well. So I don't know. I still think Plumlee stays, but I actually agree with you. I think there is something there that, you know, they were hiring him – coming out of the season, obviously he did really well second half of the year, but I still think he probably ends up staying. I just don't know the whole money issue. I'm not really sure what he gets when it's all said and done. It's I'm kind of, I don't know. I don't know how to do that situation. Yeah.
It's so, like, I feel like we had, you know, everyone's talking about the summer of spending, and it certainly was at first. Like, the very first deal was Mozgov, 464. You saw Ryan Anderson get 480, and you're just thinking, oh, like, it's wild.
The first two Clipper deals, like Crawford and Austin Rivers.
Yeah. But then, like, since then, it's gotten very, very reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's definitely calmed down. Like, we see, like, guys taking a one-year flyer, like Terrence Jones, Jared Sollinger, even guys taking the veterans minimum. You know, we saw with Zaza. We saw with Brandon Bass.
Yeah, I mean, Zaza, I like, you can't really count that. Like, that that's a Warriors thing. But, like, Quincy Acey getting vet min, that's crazy. Yeah. That's a hell of a rebounder. Like, that's a real player, a young player. For him to get that.
He's 26. He does not look 26.
No, he doesn't. It's the beard. The beards make, like, I barely get carded, and I'm 21 just because of the beard. One team I still think could be a good Monroe target would be the New Orleans Pelicans. I feel like they still want him. They haven't picked up a center. Their center rotation right now is Omar Asik, who's hardly a real player. Alexis Ajinso, who I like, but is not a great center. And Kendrick Perkins, who is really just a moving screen embodied. Like, that's what they've got. They could, like, send over someone like Tyreke Evans, who I don't love Tyreke Evans, but I'd like him better than Greg Monroe.
I was talking about this with Adam, the editor of Behind the Buck Pass. Alvin Gentry was on the Low Post, and he said that Tyreke is likely going to miss the start of the season because of something with his knee. Why am I forgetting? It wasn't like a torn ACL, but it was something pretty significant. So
yeah.
Yeah.
I really, at this point, like, I just want the floor to be opened up, like, at any cost. Like, if the Pelicans would be willing to toss in some picks, I would even take that Asik deal and just, like, I don't know, stretch him. Can we even stretch again? I don't even know. I'd have to look that up. I don't know if the owners would want to pay him all that money. But, like, I would take it for, like, two picks, two firsts. And I wrote about this before.
I take it, honestly, I don't know. I just think he's going to want – if I think unless if his season just craters, he just has a horrible season or misses the entire season or whatever. I think even like a second-round pick, a high second-round pick or something, I know that's not what people want to hear or expect for a guy like Monroe or even the team, but I just think, like you said, it's an addition by subtraction. Getting something in return when you know that – a year from now, he's probably going to walk. He's probably going to get way more money from another team that is probably going to face the same situation like every time Monroe, you know, goes to a new team. I just think to get something in return where it may not be the greatest value, but just it's something, another asset, something in your back pocket that you have. I think that's something that I would like to do, but I don't. The Bucks definitely don't. The front office does not agree with that at all.
Which I really don't understand it. Like, you didn't – like, they traded away some guys for nothing to make space, and you can sort of count that as a cost. But, like, you didn't really give up anything for him. Like, they signed him. They didn't have to trade away young players.
No. Like,
you're not losing anything.
I mean, you could make the argument that they definitely – they traded away Zaz. I mean, they were salary dumps at the time, and they still are. It wasn't related to the transaction, but they obviously got rid of Zaza and Jared Dudley. And I mean, at the time, it sucked for last season. We would have to imagine a world where we would have them on the team, and we'd have to face these same deals or extend them or re-sign them to higher deals this summer. But obviously, they moved on without him for Monroe. I don't know. It's just it's such a weird situation. It's just I wrote about it with the other day, and it's so funny to me how or what I wanted to write or what I wanted to get across with that piece about MCW and Monroe, these two guys that have struggled mightily since coming to the Bucks, and every, you know, teams around the league know it, is that Monroe is a he's not fully formed, but he is probably the best as he's going to be, and it doesn't fit for what the Bucks want to do in the future. And I think, to me, that's interesting, especially coming from the FCW perspective, where everything is so in theory. We've heard about this guy that can play, you know, be this defensive disruptor, you know, stop or whatever, and this guy that he could – we want him to be like a Sean Livingston, but we don't really see that from him yet. I don't know. I think it's really odd to see how – they still kind of believe in a guy that is still a work in progress, and then the guy that clearly doesn't fit, and obviously I agree that he doesn't fit, but nothing – they just can't move him. It's so clear at this point. We've heard – every time we hear about Monroe, it's about trades. You know, it's – I don't know. It's odd to me.
I mean, I just feel like at this point it seems like you just can't keep him. But at the same time, the situation is starting to remind me a lot of the Markieff Morris situation in Phoenix. And there's different reasons for it not working. Like, Greg Monroe didn't commit any crimes, as far as I know. Like, it's nothing like that. Like, there's just really just basketball fit more than anything else. But, I mean, everyone said, oh, like, the Suns need to trade him right now, or they're the stupidest team ever. And they sat on him, and they waited, and they waited, and they got a couple of good games out of him. And they ended up, I remember tracking this at the time and praising Phoenix GM Ryan McDonough for having the balls for this, because when everyone said they had to trade him, the talk was just to get a team to take him, they'd need to throw in an asset like Archie Goodwin, and mm-hmm. they let him play and like had him prove himself and ended up getting a first round pick for him that they turned into
was that I think actually it turned into Chris because it was the 13th pick.
Oh, right? Yeah. They traded. Did they trade up with it?
Yeah, because that was a part of the Kings deal that eventually went – was Pabianis.
Yeah. So, I mean, you don't want to say they – so they used that pick to then get Chris, who could be a very good player. It's a chance at a good player, which is all you can ask for from a draft pick. So they turned Markieff Morris into that. Instead of, you know, giving up a player just to take him. I don't think the Bucks would have to give up someone to make a team take Greg Monroe, but I could see them trying to sort of like shoehorn a good game out of him and then going, hey, look, he can play, take him. I don't know if that's the best strategy, just because like Phoenix was ass, to put it plainly. Like, they weren't very good. Like, they didn't have to worry about losing anything. The Bucks could have a real shot at being a playoff team. I don't know if that's worth throwing away to pump up Monroe's trade value, especially because, and this is something I've wrote about a bit, and I think it's an important like thing for Bucks fans to wrap their head around because they're not used to it. This team doesn't need really that much, if any, more young talent. Like, it's kind of mm-hmm. set. Like, there's no more need for a cornerstone. Like, they're already here.
Yeah.
Like, I hate this talk about trading Middleton for two Nets picks and all this. Because it's like, no, like, there's no reason to do that. Like, you have the core. It's growing up. Two out of the three of them have shown signs of all-star level play in Giannis and Chris. Jabari's not there yet, but he's set back from that injury. Like, it's certainly possible, hopefully probably, he gets there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you add in Thon, who's a question mark, but one who also has that potential. And that's why we like the Malcolm Brogdon pick, because they don't want to take more guys who they just hope pan out. Like, there's no reason to do that. You just need to surround these guys with the right complementary pieces. Like, the Bucks don't need to nail a Greg Monroe trade to be good. Like, they don't need to. Like, they already have the pieces. They could fuck up the trade and still be good as long as it didn't include one of their pieces. Like, if they got a second-round pick that turns into another player, like, even another guy like J.O.B., like, that doesn't hurt them. Like, they don't need to get a real guy out of it. I mean, you can formulate a starting five and a bench without Monroe and without accounting for any return from that trade at all that looks like a good team. You know, you got Dellavedova, Middleton, Giannis, Jabari, Henson, and then on the backups, you're looking at MCW, Brogdon, somewhere Rashad Vaughn is in there, probably Steve Novak. There is that hole at wing, but then you're talking Mirza Teletovic, Thon Maker, and probably Miles Plumlee. Like, that's a pretty good team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I agree, too. Like, I mean, we focus on the deals that obviously didn't work out. Last year's draft, for example, is probably the biggest one at this point. Or even we're going to see it again this year with, you know, Pat McCaw, because he's, I do like him a lot for with the Warriors. But it is one of those things where you want to try to find like diamonds in the rough and all this stuff, but at the same time, these guys at the most, they're going to be rotation players or at most maybe a six man, because everything is so defined from the starting lineup 2 through 4. You're trying to maybe even one, who knows? You're just trying to find supporting cast type players at this point, because there's a lot of, you know, positivity and excitement around the core three of Middleton, Giannis, Jabari. You know, I don't know. It's, I do agree with you that I think not every pick is going to be a home run. And we react negatively when stuff doesn't fall the Bucks' way after a, you know, a trade that doesn't go well. But at the most, what are these guys going to be? I don't know. You never know. They still find ways to swing for the fences, you know, Thon in particular, and, you know, go the more conventional route like Brogdon.
Yeah, I mean, this is something I said on the earlier podcast I just did before with Joey Burbs. For me, the Thon Maker pick feels like the franchise acknowledging that they probably won't end up with the 10th overall pick again for a long time. Like, it feels like the last attempt they're going to get at hitting a home run. It's like, you know, you're down 5 with a couple seconds left and you just jack up with, well, that's actually a horrible, because they're going to go on to win. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Ignore that abject failure of an analogy. It's they don't expect to be back here. Like, I think the team rightly expects to be at least contending for a playoff spot. Like, I don't think they're picking any higher than 13 or 14 at the absolute highest this year. Maybe higher than that if there's injuries, but I really don't see it. Like, I think they're going to be around the 8th, 7th, 6th seed maybe if Giannis and Chris continue to have good years, which there's not really any evidence that shows that they wouldn't. Like, I think that's where they should be. And then from there, you expect it to just get better as those guys continue to develop. So I think the franchise really looked at this like, we're not going to end up with the 10th overall pick again for a while. So could we take a guy like Denzel Valentine, who's going to be a good role player? Yeah, but like, we can sign that guy. You know, you can sign Mirza Teletovic and Dellavedova, who are, I think Dellavedova is going to be a quality starter, but still a role player on this team. But like, you can sign role players. You can't sign a guy with the potential like Thon Maker. Like, they won't have a real shot at another guy like that, maybe for a while. And like I said, they don't really need it, but if it's the last chance, like, why not go for it and just see what happens? So now I think in that context, the pick makes a little more sense to me. I still really love the Brogdon pick. Thought it was fantastic. I wish they would have gotten Pat McCaw too.
Yeah. Yeah. We all do.
Because there's going to be, even if Plumlee and Novak get brought back, there's still a roster spot open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's.
Could have been Pat.
Could have been Pat.
We're running up on an hour here, but my last thing, I guess we never got back to Summer League. Real quick, are you worried about the little big three struggling in Summer League, or is it just Summer League?
Yes and no. Or yes, I'm worried, and yes, it is Summer League. That's how I should have answered that right away.
Did you like what you saw from Brogdon?
Yes. When you brought up the earlier question, I was going to say Brogdon first, but
yeah,
Thon and everything.
Sorry.
I was pleasantly surprised by how well of a facilitator he was. Obviously, that was probably his best. Probably it was his best strength over the course of Summer League. But he was really good with the ball. He just was smooth. He's not overly athletic or anything like that. Like, he still had trouble beating people off the dribble, and that's probably going to be how he is with his career. But I was very – not shocked, but I was surprised by how well of a facilitator and seeing – you kind of could imagine him as maybe a second-unit point guard, if need be, in spot minutes. But that's just another – there's a lot of other things that – complicate that, But obviously his shot, that was a little strange. And maybe it was because of his role, you know, he's focusing on facilitating. It definitely wasn't encouraging that this guy that who's really good at, or, you know, possible 3-and-D type guy, he was struggling with the first part of that comparison, or, you know, label throughout summer league. But it is 5 games, you know, you never know. It is, I would assume that he's not, even though it does give him the Bucks another dimension with him, playing him as a possible point guard, I wouldn't think that's his role at all, really, during the season. So hopefully he can improve his shot from the other aspect. With Vaughn, I was disappointed, even though it is summer league. It just...
This feels like where he should be amazing. Like, he feels like a summer league kind of guy, just a gunner. Like, this is where you'd think he should thrive.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And he had one game, maybe? One for sure game where he looked like, oh, this is the type of guy that we've heard about with Vaughn coming out of college. You know, the kind of guy, the Vaughn that we knew was in there throughout last season. That even preseason, we saw him preseason again. Don't overreact to that. but there was something there, and then it's just, I don't know. I keep saying this during winning six, that until he finally gets like a consistent 3-point shot, or just can live up to the shooter label, or, you know, that was being thrown around when he was drafted and all this stuff, I don't know what he can do to help the Bucks in a positive impact. And it's actually funny to hear about all this stuff about Thon, and some of it is true that he, you know, why would the Bucks take him? They don't have a D League, all this stuff, like, development wise. And I don't know. There is some merit to that for sure. But I think that was, looking back at it, I think that's the kind of questions we should have been asking when they took Vaughn. Honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not deflating, but it's concerning.
I don't know that Thon is the most raw player on the Bucks roster to also be on their summer league team. Like, I think his attitude maybe was a little less NBA ready, but like overall skills, like, I think he can contribute a lot more than Rashad Vaughn will be able to next year.
Yes.
Which is half, you know, glowing praise on Thon for getting involved and doing stuff, and half pretty rough indictment on Rashad Vaughn.
Yes.
The thing about me that worries me about Vaughn is that I feel like Brogdon's going to suck up all his minutes like a Hoover.
Yes.
Because just his attitude, I mean, he's older, he's more polished, like, that makes sense. But like I said, like, this team expects to be at least all right next year. I don't know how many times they're going to let Rashad Vaughn just miss a bunch of threes. I think Brogdon's going to adjust and be a better 3-point shooter. It'll be harder now that the Bucks lost the shot doctor.
Yeah. Oppenheimer's
out. But I think Brogdon will adjust. I mean,
by the way, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
But I do like this. I really do like Josh Oppenheimer, and I thought he was a good hire for the Rockets. But it is knowing that he's being known as the shot doctor and all this stuff, and for a team that struggled with shooting for a while with the young prospects, I can understand why he wasn't renewed from that aspect. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just what I thought there out there.
Yeah, that's certainly fair. But I just think, like, if Brogdon's shot develops and he plays like the defense we sort of expect, if his assist turnover ratio is anywhere close to the, like, 7.6 that it was in summer league, like,
that's
crazy. It was nuts. I just don't see where Rashad gets minutes with him there. Like, because, you know, Middleton and Giannis are going to play a ton. Dellavedova is going to play. MCW is going to play.
Mm-hmm.
And if they add a wing player, like, if they do go out and get Mo Harkless, or like, that might be a pipe dream. But if they got someone like that, that guy's going to play. And then you're looking at Brogdon and Vaughn fighting for what's left at the minutes. It's going to go to Brogdon. Yeah. So
there's something discernible with Brogdon, even though we saw, again, small sample size. But there was positive to take away, like, you know, playmaking or even defensively. The Grizzlies game was really cool to watch, to see him go against Wade Baldwin. That battle was interesting. You just saw him. He competes on both ends of the floor, whether he's better at one end or the other. I mean, that's up to, you know, us listening or watching. But there's something discernible with Brogdon, whereas Vaughn, where, again, this guy that was labeled as hyped up as a shooter and all this stuff, he hasn't been anything but. And it's honestly, he might be a better defender at this point than people give him credit for. But again, is that going to move the needle? Probably not. It's, I don't know, it's unfortunate.
Well, I mean, and just Brogdon's just whole attitude and the way he approaches the game. I mean, his nickname in college was like the president.
Yep.
He speaks like a president and he acts like one too. He's one of the more disciplined players. And that's the kind of thing that coaches love. That gets you minutes. If you stay in your lane, you don't overexert yourself, you defer to your teammates, you play good defense. Like, coaches love guys who are good team players on offense and hold their own on defense. Like, those guys always find minutes. Like, that's why Luol Deng just got paid. What do you get? 464? Something like that?
Like, that's a little higher.
I think you're right. Was it 472?
That's what it was. At 31 like years that. Old.
But that's why. Like, literally, he's a hell of a defensive player. He's kind of limited on offense. Like, he's okay. He used to be better. He's a little worn down. But absolutely great chemistry guy. Like, those guys are valuable. That's why Brogdon, I think, is going to eat up all these minutes. Real quick here, at the end, the Bucks have made two signings so far. Mirza Teletovic for $10 million a year. Matthew Dellavedova for around $9.5 million a year. How do you feel about the signings so far?
I am happy. I want to say very happy, but I'm happy. I just think with all the names, big names that they were attached to, whether it was warranted or not, like Dwight Howard or even Ricky Rubio, obviously wasn't free agent, but
yeah.
I felt like they needed to find players that may not have like this. May not be the sole difference makers to help them get back to the playoffs or, you know, winning ways. But I just feel like they fill out a need that they really have needed over the last year, or even more so year and a half with Delly. I just think, I think both of them, both Telly and Delly, I think they will be not perfect. I mean, nothing's perfect in the NBA.
Yeah.
But I just think it's going to work out. Maybe that's blind answers at this point. Who knows? But I feel like there's something there with them that they can easily fill out a good role for them next to, you know, the core three.
I feel like there are three things the Bucks, and there's probably more, but like there's three primary things that the Milwaukee Bucks lacked last season that made them a bad team. Shooting and defense are obvious ones. I think character would be the third most, maybe higher than that. Like, I feel like they lost Dudley. That was huge. There were some problems, you know, rumored with Monroe and Middleton. There was Jabari trying to get on guys for joking around too much. And if you look at all four of the guys they added, really, but the free agents especially, you know, we've already talked about nobody's really outworking Thon Maker. Like, he wants this so bad. Like, he came from Sudan to Australia to Canada to America, I think, for a little while. And now he made 10th overall pick. Malcolm Brogdon's a consummate professional. Dellavedova is one of the harder working guys and really a very team first guy. I remember I wrote about why he's such a good fit after they signed him and focused on, like, how he'll let Giannis do stuff. But at the end, I included an interview. I don't know if you remember this. This was last year's playoffs where he went off, like the game Kyrie got hurt. and he got to go up to the podium, and they kept they asked him, you know, did you ever picture this moment you up here at the podium? And he's like, this podium and all this is just fluff. Like, I just want to help my team win. And we did that tonight. And I was like, I love that. Like, that's the perfect thing to say. And like, LeBron really liked him because LeBron loves that kind of shit too. And then Mirza Teletovic, also another guy who just had to work, came like even before the blood clot thing, like where he came from in Bosnia, just getting here, coming back from blood clots, having a great season last year, low key breaking the 3-pointers made by a bench player record, which like I didn't know we kept track of that, but we do, and he did it. So I just think like attitude wise, like these guys are going to bring a whole lot to this team and to these young, you know, the big three, that it's just going to help make everything run a lot smoother. And that's not even looking at how much they'll help on the court as well. Like, I think there's a lot of reason for optimism right now. I don't think it should get crazy. Like, I see people saying Eastern Conference Finals this year or next year. Like, I don't know about that. LeBron is still here. There's still some great players. But, and this is a fun note to end on, like, there seems to be a path to the Bucks being a powerhouse team within half a decade from now.
I certainly hope so. I will go.
I'm not saying it's certain. I'm not saying it's for sure going to happen, but like you're starting to see the pieces of the puzzle come together. I feel like right now, like I think things are going in the right direction generally.
Yes. Yeah. There's definitely more hope and buzz, or not hope. Buzz is not the right word, but just hope around the core, these, you know, cornerstones of the team. We haven't seen that in a long time. There was maybe stretches of here or there, but not to this level where Giannis and Chris already are. And I think Jabari specifically, I think we're going to put him in this conversation of being not the top tier or the top player of the team or anything like that. But I don't know. I'm still very high on Jabari. And I think point Giannis or whatever you want to call it, I think that kind of helps him the most out of anyone right now, because it kind of lets him grow in a role where it's more defined, where it's not this kind of unclear who's really the power forward, small forward, whatever like that. I think that opens up more for him, and hopefully we can start seeing as or continues this season from what he was doing at the last half of last year.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I want to say, and I wrote this a while ago, but I'm pretty sure point Giannis's favorite pass target was Jabari Parker. Like the bulk of his passes went to Jabari, and Jabari's numbers I think were better with Giannis at the point, which makes sense. Like you said, it opens up the forward position for him. It's exciting right now. It's good stuff. It's going to be maybe not the most fun year, but I think we're going to see signs of a team starting to really come together after a step back last year. I mean, if Thon turns out, maybe it was a worthwhile step back. Is there anything else you wanted to cover about the Bucks summer league and offseason thus far, Jordan?
I don't think I can think of anything.
I think we did
whoever
a lot.
Stole, I will say this, whoever stole Joshua Smith's number, can they please return it to them? That was not a good joke. But yeah, I don't have anything else.
You tried there. Do you have any plugs to make?
Just read Behind the Buck Pass or my stuff at Hoops Habit. I always said Hoops Habit. Hoops Habit. And listen to Win 6.
Jordan's being modest. You should follow him on Twitter. I think it's now just at Jordan Tresky, isn't it?
It is.
It's the professional name. At Jordan Tresky.
Surprisingly, you can follow me else with that name.
You're the only one.
Yeah.
I'm the only Ty Windish. You can follow me at Ty Windish. Check out all this stuff at Behind the Buck Pass. Follow the podcast at Time Out with Ty. We don't have enough Twitter followers. I have these great guests that put up with me for an hour. And they say so much cool stuff. Like, you got to come listen to this at Time Out with Ty, the site. And check out the Hardwood Paroxysm Quarterly. Somehow they let me get involved with that, which might be a mistake on their part. I did my best. It's really worth $5. and follow Joey Burbs on Twitter, joeyburbs.com. He just released a new single, In Demand, which is the new intro and outro music to this podcast. Exciting stuff. We got a new sound. There's more changes coming, too. I'll hint that now. Jordan, thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
Go Bucks.
Go Bucks.